podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Welcome to All About Android, episode 91, recorded on Tuesday, January 8th, 2013. Ha, I got it right. We are your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. And I'm so excited for this episode. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Gina Trapani.
Yeah! You are the source of my excitement. Well, other than the fact that I'm just happy to be back doing the show.
Year. We've had 2 weeks off. We might be a little rusty, but we're welcoming Gina.
It's great to be here. I'm so excited to be on the show. So excited.
Well, we are thrilled to have you, Gina. The things that you've done and that you're doing is just a laundry list of awesome. Founding editor of lifehacker.com, creator of ThinkUp, developer of todo.txt. That's for Android and iOS, right? That's cross developed. Host of course, on this network This Week in Google, as well as in beta with Kevin Purdy, who we've had on the show many times.
Yep.
Doing some awesome stuff. We're just super thrilled that this gets added to that list.
We are not intimidated at all by having someone very much smarter than us, as evidenced by my sentence structure.
Oh, come on. This is episode 91. I'm totally the rookie, so I hope everyone will go easy on me. I'm really, really excited to be here. And just absolutely thrilled.
So,
Android, loving it.
Yeah, so we might as well do this, because I ask people this from time to time when they come on the show for the first time. You've been on the show once before, but I'm having a hard time remembering. What is your device right now? What are you using?
I'm using the Galaxy Nexus as my phone, and I've got the Nexus 7. The Logitech Review is connected to my kind of like big living room TV, so I use that pretty often.
Awesome.
And, you know, honestly, just a bunch of test devices, because I develop for Android. I've got, you know, a few gingerbread phone. I had an old Nexus S lying around. And I had a Zoom there for a while, a Samsung Galaxy Tab. I've been to Google I.O. a couple of times, so I've gotten a few giveaways. But the Galaxy Nexus is kind of my main device, and then the Nexus 7 secondarily. Love the Nexus 7.
Yeah, the 7 is great. And so you're using the Review. Do you still use it pretty frequently, or is it kind of showing its age at this point for you?
It is showing its age. I have to reboot that thing, like unplug it and replug it in.
Ouch. At least
once a week or every 2 weeks. Yeah, it just gets kind of skippy and slow. I use it to watch Netflix and YouTube,
right?
Basically. But yeah, I want Google TV to be better. And we're actually going to talk about that a little bit today.
Absolutely, we are. Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. We have the X Phone, which is kind of an interesting little bit of kind of rumory news with Google, Motorola. Some impressive projections from the Play Store. At least I thought it was pretty impressive. And, this little thing, you may have heard of it. It's called the Consumer Electronics Show. It happens in Vegas every year. No big deal.
Nothing really big going on. Nothing much.
Maybe
it's
a couple
of light first show for me.
Should I do my
reveal away.
For those of you who follow me on Twitter might have saw I was teasing and I was joking that I was going to go full Android on the show this week to welcome Gina. Now, to define that, a lot of the folks in the chat room, sometimes they kind of complain because we're here on set and we're using our MacBook Pros and like, you're an Android show, why are you using Macs? So Christmas, I was very lucky to get the things I asked for. And so for this show, I am closing the laptop. And I am going to be only on my Nexus 7. So I've got our little rundown.
Yeah. Wow.
How will you pull that off, Ron?
So what I've got here is that I've got the Nexus 7 plus the lovely Logitech Bluetooth keyboard that I got for Christmas, which I've been shopping for a keyboard, and then I was like, this is the one I want. And luckily enough, my dad was smart enough to get it for me for Christmas. So I am going to be no laptop. And we don't know how it's going to go because it's a Nexus 7 and my eyesight isn't what it used to be. So
yeah, I was going to say, yeah, the screen is, particularly when you're setting it at like laptop distance, you're not holding it the way you would a tablet.
So the game that we'll play is to see how long I last with the setup. I'm predicting I don't make it to the ad.
Well, don't go into it with that kind of attitude. Come on.
Well, I guess we can dive in and find out.
This is a big deal. All right. Well, let's first get to the non-CES news. starting with you, Ron.
And right into the frying pan, into the fire.
Exactly.
So before we get into all the CES stuff, as always, we love those numbers. We love the data that comes out, the number of users that are using various things.
I can not talk about it.
And these sort of things. So a recent report actually came out this week that Jelly Bean has passed 10% adoption. And ice cream sandwich nears 30%, and gingerbread, the mighty gingerbread, has finally fallen to under 50%. This has been numbers that we've been tracking for a while, as gingerbread has had a stranglehold on the number of users.
Yeah,
but honestly, this was a bigger increase than I thought we would see. You know, like, I'm impressed by it.
You mean the speed up for Jelly Bean?
Yeah, exactly. If you pull back up the graph, there's a little pie chart that kind of shows you the dispersal. And you see that while gingerbread is under 50%, it's just a hair under 50% at about 47%. And then honeycomb is still hanging in there at about 1.5%. Ice cream sandwich is at 29.1%, and jelly bean crosses the 10% threshold with 10.2%. So that's a nice little kind of spread.
So. Yeah, particularly when you think of the kind of design paradigm of Android changing with ice cream sandwiches, that's 40%. Yeah. Almost half of the devices tracked in this are in that new kind of presentation. That's good. I keep reading, you know, just on Reddit and different places, that gingerbread is the XP of Android.
That's a really good comparison.
That's a really good.
Actually, it really is.
It just won't go away for whatever reason.
And we know it won't go away just because it's the device penetration. So hopefully, all these new devices then have the same effect in 2013.
Yeah.
I'm excited about these numbers going up faster than maybe previous new versions have gone up. I think that the acceleration is a little faster, but at the same time, like. Not to be a downer on my first sort of comment on All About Android, but like this fragmentation problem really is a big one. Like this needs to get better. That has to get better. The new versions just have to come out faster. It's frustrating for developers, and I think it's just frustrating, I think, for regular people. Like, you know, my sister's contract is up and she's showing me the phone that she has and it's running gingerbread, and I was just like, like that feels like so 3 years ago.
Because it is 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But don't you think, I think it'll be interesting though, because what we had the problem of the operating systems being so advanced that the old hardware couldn't handle it. And and while, you know, it at some point I don't know if it's Moore's law, but isn't there some law that comes in that says the hardware will catch up with will the operating systems always be so far ahead that we'll always have antiquated, obsolete, you know, hardware supporting the operating systems, or will they get parity at some point and then it's no longer an issue?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You
know? Right.
Yeah, it is unfortunate that gingerbread, some 2 years later, is still around that 50%. And, you know, that's a big difference. The, you know, apps that were designed and developed for gingerbread versus the ones that are ice cream sandwich and beyond, it's a pretty significant cutoff that developers in particular have to respect in developing their apps, the fact that gingerbread users aren't going to be able to do a lot of the things that developers would like for them to be able to do, because that's just the way it is now in Jelly Bean and ice cream sandwich.
I wonder if there's like gingerbread loyalist message boards out there, or people who are like really proud of their apps.
GB for life.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, does it work on gingerbread? You know?
You know, it's interesting. Like, I think my working theory is that there's two kind of types of Android users. There's like regular people and there are the superpower users. And my app, To Do Text, is sort of, you know, absolutely like unapologetically nerdware, and my numbers, I've got about 10,000 users and my numbers are way higher. Like 20% are of Android 4.2, 20% are on Android 4.1. So it's a much higher, you know, much better numbers than all apps across the board. So I feel like the people who are listening to this show in particular, you know, they're more likely to have the much more advanced versions, right? So I don't think you're ever going to see the gingerbread enthusiast forums.
Yeah, well, I refer to that same audience as the normal people, as the people, you know, the my sister and people out there who aren't, you know, aren't as enlightened as we are with our podcasts and all these sort of things. But I mean, I'm hopeful because, like I said, this is going at it's increasing the rate of adoption with the amount of new handsets that are coming out. You know, like, I expect to see these gingerbread numbers now drop in the next 6 months, like, pretty dramatically.
Especially
after they process the Christmas numbers. Because this probably doesn't. I forgot to see what the dates of these number the sampling comes from. But it's got to be after Christmas. People are going to have new phones and that sort of thing. So should be interesting.
So moving on, I guess this could kind of relate because if Google and Motorola start making their own device, and in particular the X phone. That is kind of rumored here. There was a rumor that hit last week. Wall Street Journal reported that they were working on the X phone to go up against the iPhone, but it's kind of coming out, you know, a little bit later. You know, we started to hear about Samsung's Tizen direction, Tizen, their own kind of open source, I believe, direction for the OS and possibly inching away from Android as a result of that. This could be a way for Google, you know, with Motorola to kind of take on that the Android beast. I mean, Google with Motorola and, you know, just Motorola in general isn't as much of a monster as I'm sure Google would love for it to be. Samsung really controls a lot of what's going on with Android right now. I mean, just from a market kind of influence perspective.
That's a very enlightened business chess game that's happening. Yeah. You know what I mean? Where if it's like, because ultimately, Apple is the enemy and everything they want to do is to take down Apple. But in doing so, Samsung has gotten built up to be pretty strong and Google owns Motorola. They can have a lot more power over what they're doing. I mean, I'm kind of not surprised to hear this. And I wouldn't be surprised if they want to knock Samsung kind of back and show them who's boss. So
my 2013 wish is that this X phone is a giveaway at Google I.O. in May.
That would be great. I would join you in that wish. That'd be wonderful.
I think they would have enough time to kind of make that happen based on when the acquisition was finalized and I don't know what the lead time is in developing a new device.
If it's being rumored now and presumably because of leaks or whomever is talking, if people are talking about it, especially, I mean, whereas at Apple, they can keep, they used to be able to keep secrets pretty tight. Google seems like, and especially with these other companies, these stuff gets out there. So if we're talking about it, it's probably more of a reality than we might think. Just the fact that it's probably more than just an idea on a whiteboard. I wouldn't be surprised. I.O. might be a little, especially because it's in May, 5 months, manufacturing time, all that sort of thing. That might be tight.
Close.
That would be sweet. I know a lot of people would love to see a Motorola, you know, Motorola's kind of design aesthetic looped into the Nexus. Not even taking into the account that Google now owns Motorola. So whatever the possibilities are around that kind of close integration between the two. So, I would be very curious to see how that goes. Now, okay, I kind of loaded this on you, Gina. I'm really sorry.
This is quite a first story, Jason.
Way to throw the newbie under the bus.
I didn't mean to. I was actually right before the show writing up my notes. And if you see in the cell, I have a bunch of notes there. So I can kind of rattle that off. But I should ask you, what do you know about this whole FTC settling with Google thing? Because it kind of confuses me. The more I read into it, the more I kind of understood about, you know, kind of the FRAND terms and how that might relate to the other players in the industry, Apple, Microsoft, Samsung. But I don't know. Do you want to take a stab at this or should I?
All right. I'm going to take a really high level, easy stab at this. So the story is that the FTC and Google have settled. And this is a big deal in sort of the patent wars, right? So the FTC announced at a press conference Google had settled its antitrust claims with the agency. But along with the settlement came two stipulations. The first one is that Google and Motorola will cease seeking product bans for standards essential patent infringement. Mm-hmm. This is a great thing, right? Because this opens up, this means that mobile manufacturers can attempt to innovate without fear of being sued, right? And now the second stipulation, and Jason, I'm relying on your notes, so thank you very much. I can't find it.
Is it about stopping to seek product bans?
Oh yeah, that's the right. So they're gonna yes. Yes. Oh, the second stipulation is that they're going to resolve this stuff out of court in arbitration, right? So this is a good thing, right? Because it means that the fear of getting sued over patent wars will be a lot less, right? We should see a lot more innovation. Again, this is the very high level view of this story. Did I miss anything there?
No, I think you got it. And anyone who's watched the show for a little bit knows that. usually with the patent stuff, I end up taking it because just in putting them into the lineup, you know, I'm trying to wrap my head around it enough to make sense of it. And the patent thing is just so frigging confusing to me.
It's our favorite bit of content, really. I mean, the patent, all the legal favorite. The more kind of case law we can get Jason analyzing, excellent, the better.
That would be awesome. I guess what I wonder out of this, because the article that we have in the lineup from Android Police is kind of saying that this is major. This is a big deal as it relates to the other players in the industry. Probably just slightly less major than the Samsung case was that was settled about, you know, that got ruled on about halfway through last year. Does this make a big difference in the patent wars? Like, it seems on the outside that I guess it could, but I guess I'm not understanding how. Is it just that if these are standards essential patents, which basically means that companies have access to these, should have reasonable access to these things, that they aren't stepping on any toes in the process, and so therefore those cases have no leg to stand on?
Seems like it.
Yeah. So Google's not going to go after these companies that try to use these technologies, and so standard essential patents are these technologies crucial to device interoperability. Mm-hmm. Tech companies agree to license these to rivals and competitors, and this is the FRAND acronym: fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory terms.
Right.
It seems like this is an agreement to say, you know what, let's play nice, let's settle this out of court, let's try to avoid lengthy, costly legal battles over technologies that seem, you know, that we should be able to share and distribute and innovate across mobile manufacturers.
Well, I hope that is the case. I really do hope that 2013 is the year where we don't have to talk about patents so much. Not so much because I don't enjoy patent talk, but because it's something that needs to be put to rest.
It's draining. It's draining. And as long as I've been doing these shows with you, as long as I've been listening to Tom on the various shows and stuff like that, it's always been an issue, at least for the past six plus years.
Yeah, it's gonna
continue. And honestly, I don't think it's. I mean, this goes back to the greater thing. It's not the company's fault. It's the legal system and the patent system and the government. It's a government issue that we're the victims.
The companies are just taking advantage of the fact that they are able to do that.
And that's what they do.
Yeah.
That's capitalism.
Yeah.
And they keep lawyers and tech commentators in material.
Stumbling over their words for generations.
You really shouldn't be biting the hand that feeds you here, this is at least 5 minutes of content that we have in every couple of weeks.
That's true. All right, well, let's take a listen to a voicemail. We have a voicemail from Tony, who had what I thought was an interesting question about recording audio as it relates to kind of music and, you know, out of a soundboard. Take it away, Tony.
Hi, All About Android crew. This is Tony in Southern Indiana. First off, congratulations for adding Gina to the show. My question is in regards to recording line-in recordings on your phone or tablet. I have a Galaxy S3 and a Nexus 10. And I also run sound for a band, and I would like to take the RCA audio out of the soundboard and run it into one of my devices so I could record it in some kind of an app. Would like a suggestion on a high-fidelity way to connect them, as well as an app. I know there are things like iRig and iGuitar for the Apple devices. Didn't know if there was something similar for Android. I appreciate any and all suggestions. Keep up the great work.
It's a great question.
Yeah, and I feel like
team.
Hi again,
Davis.
Tony. Don't worry, we're going to answer your question. You don't need to interrupt us. Ask us again. It's cool. We heard you. No, it's a great question. I feel like we've gotten something similar to this before. Yep. While I was looking into it,
and you're a bit of an audiophile. You're a music
absolutely.
Guy.
I would love to be able to do this without having to have, you know, too much extra gear and equipment that you have to carry around with you. The problem is on iOS. Things are a lot more, let's just say, you know, as you were saying earlier, Gina, on Android, things are a little bit more fragmented. There is less of those standards that kind of go across every single bit of device that you can rely on. One thing that you can probably rely on for the most part, at least with phones and possibly with tablets, is that your eighth-inch audio jack, which on the Galaxy Nexus is down there, accepts a 4-pin connector, and that's what enables you to do the thing where you have your headphones on. It has a microphone, so you can talk into it as well as listen to your music. Well, iRig Recorder, which the iRig is an audio interface for and has been for a while for iOS. It's by IK Multimedia.
Very cool.
They do, you know, a lot of kind of professional and consumer kind of music recording software as well as hardware. They just announced at CES that they are coming out with one for Android at the end of January. And so it's a little kind of plug for your headphone jack, as long as it takes that four-pin connector. And then it allows you to kind of have this little breakout box that you can take an XLR input. Now, I know that's not RCA, which is what you asked about specifically, Tony, but I'm sure you're an audiophile, so you would agree that XLR is even better than RCA. So hopefully you can kind of get a cleaner signal out of that. But that might be one way to do it. It sounds like it's a hardware breakout box as well as a piece of software that allows you to record it. I do know through poking around a little bit that the iRig for iOS, or at least the current version that you can buy, I think it's like $40, does work with some devices. It might even work the same, and maybe the only differentiator here is that it comes with an Android app. Yep. I'm not really quite sure. But if you did that, you'd probably have to get your own audio recording app, something like Smart Voice Recorder, something along those lines to kind of loop it in as well.
Right.
It's not a stereo recording. That's the only thing that I couldn't find a stereo input. You're recording from a soundboard, you probably want stereo if you can.
Yeah, that's the challenge. I mean, that's the biggest. I get into this argument with Mauricio, who we've had on the show on before, mm-hmm. because we both DJ, and he's a very old school DJ with vinyl and records.
Yeah.
And I DJ using my iPad, using that DJ app, and it's got there's the headphone splitter that allows me to have to hear the preview, and then it splits it to the live. But he's like, yeah, it's not stereo. It's making it and I was like, yeah, but you know, my hearing is so bad. I'm like, yeah, who cares? You know, like, it doesn't matter. But to those real audiophiles, the lack of stereo is an issue. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So anyways, Tony, let us know if that helps. It was kind of great timing that this was happening. Jerry Hildenbrand saw a post that I put on Google Plus and gave me that link to an article he wrote about it this morning. I was like, what is it's crazy how it all falls into place. All right. We don't really have a roll in for this, so you don't need to roll anything, Brian. But this is where we talk about CES. About time we get to Android from CES. I think we can probably all agree that kind of the takeaway right now from CES, at least the big name that everybody seems to be talking about, is NVIDIA, right?
They seem to have dropped the biggest bombs, so mm-hmm. at least so far. I mean, we're recording, so this is Tuesday. CES, everything pretty much all started this weekend, and the demos and announcements, stuff like that, started rolling out on Sunday and Monday. But at this point, as far as I can tell, NVIDIA has stolen the show. So far.
So, I mean, just right off the top, Tegra 4 announced, quad-core A15 CPU, 72 GPU cores. Sounds nifty, but they tie it right into something that I think is kind of the subject of what everybody's talking about. That's Project Shield. And Project Shield is essentially a game console. I don't know how you call it, if you call it a game console necessarily. It's running Android. It's just an Android game player, but it's roped into a controller with a screen built into the controller.
It's the next entry in this new thing of Android-based gaming, platform.
Kind of like
Ouya. Ouya, and there's the other one, which I forget the name of. But this very, I don't know if ingeniously or what, you know, taking a cue from the Wii U, it is a controller, and the whole game, everything, the whole platform is in the controller. And there's also a flip screen, so you can take it on the go and you can be in the car. But then it also integrates and works with the TV, so you can be playing the game up on the TV. Pretty darn cool. And I didn't expect to see this from NVIDIA
at all.
No one
expected this. Right?
It's crazy.
Yeah, so it kind of looks like an Xbox controller with a flip-up screen, but in black. Retinal display?
Yeah.
with the L at the end?
Marketing.
Retinal.
It's amazing how you sort of co-opt the word everyone sort of gets.
We'll add an L there.
Now, last I checked, there was no price or release date or any of the details that we all like to know. So
that's the big kind of hang-up here, is that there is no price. NVIDIA had a blog post where they say, we'll make money by selling the device to gamers. This differs from the Razors and Razor Blades approach, which isn't just used by Gillette and Schick. Game console companies primarily make their profit from premium games. This time-honored approach isn't the one we're taking with Project Shield. So that basically means they're making the money on hardware, which could probably lead you to believe that it's not going to be inexpensive.
Yeah.
I don't know. What are you guys thinking?
I looked at it and I thought right out of the gate, I thought with that screen and the device and everything, I was thinking like $399 maybe.
Yeah, $400.
Yeah, like around there.
It looks really old school to me.
It does.
Like, right? Doesn't it look like, I don't know, I just, when I think handheld gaming device these days, I think of something just much smaller. I mean, I kind of like the old school look of it, but my first reaction was just like, whoa. $399, $400, that sounds about right.
It's very reminiscent of the first Xbox controller. Like when that original old black one.
Yes, the black one. Yeah.
I mean, the thing that I not that I don't get, maybe I'm just old and, you know, you kids get off my lawn, but like with that screen, when you're home, when you're playing on the TV, what are you looking at? Are you looking at the TV and just ignoring the screen? Does the screen disconnect? You know what I mean? Like what?
I don't think the screen disconnects.
I don't think it does either. I think it's just
a
mirror.
Their intention is that you would look at the screen. I guess where that falls down is if there's any touch screen elements.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Then you have to look down at your screen and do it. But I guess you kind of have to do that with the Wii U, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Wii U, I feel, isn't that? Now, I haven't played with the Wii U, so I could be mistaken. But isn't the Wii U like a second screen?
Okay.
Isn't it that you're interacting with the screen
on the handheld, right?
Yeah, so, right. Okay. So, thank you, Burke. So now this, it's a mirror situation where what you're seeing on the screen on the device is what you're seeing on the TV. That can get a little weird. But maybe it's doing, maybe it supports, the second screen functionality, that sort of thing. By the way, over the break, I decided the term second screen, I hate. I got the Avengers DVD and they're like second screen experience on the back and they were touting all the stuff on the tab. And I was like, I don't like that. I don't like it.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
I just don't like it. That you're definitive about your opinion about it.
I like the concept. I think the concept is great. It's just we can come up with a better term than second screen. That's all. Yeah,
it's too late. That battle has already been fought.
I think it's second screen. This is my another windmill for me to tilt at.
Yeah, exactly.
It's retinal, Ron.
Retinal.
It's marketing. One thing I was kind of stoked to hear about, because I'm a big fan of the game Dead Trigger, and they showed off just a little, you know, little bit of Dead Trigger 2. I don't know if anybody else here is a fan. I don't know. I thought the game was great. Dead Trigger 2 has this god zombie guy that comes out, and it just looks massive and everything. I really, really want to play it. I'm sure we'll feature it on the show once it comes out. But, of course, that game is, you know, kind of modeled for the Tegra 4 and kind of shows off the capabilities of the processor. I don't know. Ultimately, Project Shield, It's yet another one of those things where, like, man, I give you props, NVIDIA, for trying something new. I love that about Android, that companies are doing these things that you've never seen before. It's just most of the time they're kind of head scratchers where you're like, that's cool, but I don't really know how well that's going to go for you.
The problem is, and I was laughing because my buddy Anthony Carboni, who does stuff at Revision 3 and is a big gamer, he was tweeting over the weekend and he was making fun of it nonstop because his whole thing is like, yeah, great, another, you know, like I can count of three Android video game platforms that I can now use on my TV, and I can't count one game I want to play them on.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is that so we've got these, we're going to have these great devices and these ability to play games, and they're leveraging Android in ways, you know, for gaming, but like, where are the games? Like, there hasn't been that, like, oh my God, did you get that game? It's an Android game. You need to have this to play it. Mm-hmm. Like, that hasn't happened yet. You know, where is the Fruit Ninja of Android? Where is the, you know, like, the, you know, where is the Super Mario Brothers of Android gaming? We haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right.
You mean that it's launched on Android first?
Yeah,
or
correct.
Only Android. Gotcha.
Correct. Yeah, like the game that will define the as a gaming platform. Yes, it's great that you can get Angry Birds. You can get Angry Birds everywhere. Why do I need to get this device in order to play these games? Because that going back, because the whole video game industry.
I don't know if that's going to happen.
I don't know, but if you look at the video game history, like video game thing, when video games first came out. You know, we're talking when we were kids and stuff like that with Atari and Intellivision and I was an Intellivision kid and I played Intellivision games. And what's really funny is actually there were some cross-platform releases, like you could get Donkey Kong on the Atari, but there was also a port to ColecoVision. But once Nintendo and Sega got into it, they just locked down. You only get Sonic on Sega. You only get Mario Brothers on Nintendo. Now, of course, we're in this place where it's somewhat ubiquitous, but there's still games only come out on PlayStation, games only come out on Xbox.
I mean, there's a little bit of an analog here from what you're talking about. I mean, you take NVIDIA, for example. If they come out with a game that only runs on the Tegra 4, then that's kind of what they're doing. They're saying, this is our Super Mario. You can only get it on the Tegra 4. Android as a whole, though, something that's dedicated to Android as a whole and not to iOS, I don't know if you're really going to see that a whole lot, because nowadays developers can develop for both platforms and will if given the chance because they're going to make money on both. Why wouldn't they?
True, yeah. I mean, and that's the argument. But the thing is that, like, if the next Minecraft is done on Android, that's going to be a big deal. You know, and like if that, if whatever the next big trend is, if it is on Android, that will help define the devices.
Sure.
If you can just get all the same old stuff, the only competition they have is price.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I just read Ready Player One, so I'm very video gamey. Like,
I need to keep reading that.
Oh my God, it was so good. It was so good.
Yeah, I keep meaning to read that. Well, Ron, Google TV guy.
Yes.
There's a little bit of Google TV
stuff.
There's
a little bit. We knew that.
It sounds like there's a lot of Google TV stuff there, but there's nothing. Yeah. There's only a few things that are maybe worth, like, whoa, that happened.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm always on the lookout for the Google TV stuff and excited. You know, last year we saw a lot of integration with televisions and things like that. We haven't heard any rumors and we don't see any real updates to the Google TV OS or the platform. So nothing was coming from Google. So it's going to be like, okay, well, what new devices now exist? Can we get Google TV on? We heard the rumors about the Asus Cube, and those came out to be true. So a very boxy-esque device from Asus called the Cube with a Q, Q-U-B-E. And this one is interesting. So it's running Google TV. Like we said, you look at it, it looks like the boxy kind of box. Apparently, it integrates voice and motion control, although we're not quite sure how the motion control actually works as of yet.
Yeah, because I think the one that they had there was a non- working.
Yeah,
like they showed it off, but you couldn't actually interact with it.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And so, you know, they've got it comes with a remote, or you can utilize an Android app, which is pretty neat, pretty cool. It's running the Marvel Armada 1500 platform that all the other Google TV boxes are doing. And if you look at here, these screenshots that we've got of its UI, it's bridging the physical concept of it being a cube to its UI. Mm-hmm. And so that the different faces of the cubes represent different application types. So you've got social, you've got entertainment, you've got whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, there's Netflix and all the you know, as we see here, Google Chrome and all the other kind of trappings of Google TV. And the remote comes with a built-in mic for voice commands, similar to what Sony was doing. And then it's got an integrated gyro for motion sensing controls. But what they do with that, we don't know.
Dongle?
No mention of the dongle.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah. The dongle.
Yeah.
Okay, because, you guys talked about this with Jacob a couple of episodes ago, right? You guys were saying that there was a box, but then there was a dongle, and he was sort of like, what the frack?
The rumor was it was going to be a streaming box, and there was going to be a USB dongle that ran the Google TV software, and we were saying, well, why would the software be on the dongle and why?
And Asus here is saying, yeah, exactly. Why would we do that?
Right. It made no sense.
It didn't make any sense.
But the device itself does have an Ethernet cable. It's got Wi-Fi and it's got a USB port. So if a dongle does come out, you can plug it in.
Hey, there we go. They're setting themselves up for a dongle.
It's a neat little device, and it continues Asus's partnership with Google in terms of, you know, having different devices, whether they be tablets now and now Google TV. The price is going to be somewhere between $100 and $120, which is competitive for the Google TV boxes and that sort of thing. So interesting to see that come out of Asus. Mm-hmm. And then the other announcement that came out, which is one that I was like, oh, I didn't realize they didn't have one yet. But Netgear announced the Neo TV Prime, and that's in all caps. And basically Netgear has a whole bunch of Netgear, you know, from their routers and their other sort of connectivity products, and they have a bunch of different streaming devices. Well, this is going to be a Google TV powered streaming device. So a nifty little Google TV application, but it's also got the ability to stream any media that you might have in your home and that sort of thing. Everything that you would guess from Google TV, as well as what Netflix has. So, as well as what Google TV has. So Netflix, Amazon, HBO Go, all that sort of stuff, Pandora. You know, if you're a Netgear loyalist and you've been wanting to get some sort of TV type thing, this could be a good one to go with as Netgear kind of gets into the race. So,
That's looking about $129.99.
Yeah. So
anyway, the price right now, I guess, for these kinds of devices.
I always thought the prices were going to settle in at that $99 price point.
Yeah.
You know, I'm surprised to see it going at $129. You know, but you know, Netgear's got a brand. You know, got a brand that maybe they can back that up. Put those in Best Buy. Maybe they fly off the shelf. $129 isn't that bad of a price point. So
how do you guys feel about smart TVs with Google TV embedded versus these set-top boxes?
Well, we talked about this when all this stuff was happening, and I personally want a dumb monitor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I want to buy the box.
Right.
I don't want to add it to my TV.
Yeah.
I just upgrade my TV so infrequently and I want the box separately.
Let me decide what I'm going to plug into the TV. But if you integrate anything with the TV, if I want to change it or the manufacturer makes a change I don't like, I'm stuck with it.
Did you guys see the Samsung kickstand ridiculously huge?
Yeah.
I think it was a 4K TV.
Yeah.
It's like a kickstand TV that only looks good if you have nothing plugged into it. Just the way the design is, and it's like, okay, well, yes, so we expect you to use and love the smart TV functions. But, I agree. Yeah.
It's funny because
you just don't know what you're going to want 10 years from now.
Case in point, my sister got a Samsung smart TV, the LCD ones, the super thin, like 60-inch ones, and I got her the Google TV Sony Blu-ray box. And they're like, but we can do all this stuff on the TV. I'm like, yeah, but then you're just stuck to this. And the UI kind of stinks. You can't get to a browser. It's like, trust me, you're going to get Netflix on both of them. You know, might as well have one that gives you more power,
give
you more control.
On everything.
So, yeah.
That's just me.
Yeah. And then Sony, they had some cool stuff going on. Gina, why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, Sony launches or announced their flagship smartphone for the new year, 2013, the Xperia Z and the Xperia ZL. Both have 5-inch 1080p HD displays, quad-core 1.5 gigahertz, Snapdragon S4 Pro processor, 2 gigabytes of RAM, 18 gigabytes internal storage, SD card slot, 13.1 megapixel rear-facing camera, 2.2 megapixel front-facing camera, running Jelly Bean, it looks like.
Yeah, 4.1.
The 4.1 or 4.2, right, is Jelly Bean?
Well, Jelly Bean's 4.1 and 4.2. 4.2 is like the latest iteration
The latest update,
weird thing again there with the versions.
The Verge has a hands-on with this phone, and it looks beautiful, but it also, and they pointed this out in the review, it looks extremely boxy. Like, the corners are pretty sharp and tight. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks kind of weird, actually, in your hand. Like, it looks thin and cool, but really,
picture,
really, really boxy.
Like, that picture right there is a prime example of like, that kind of looks uncomfortable.
It does. It looks a little awkward, right?
Yeah,
like, the boxiness is bothering me. Like, I guess I think I've just sort of bought into the world of sort of rounded corners or softer edges. It just looks like really sharp edges. That said, you know, the screen looks amazing. I mean, just from the pictures.
The 5-inch 1080p resolution thing is obviously a trend of this year, and we're going to see a lot more of that.
And I was going to say the 1080p. We're going to start seeing the sharp thing. The bezel on the sharpness and the squareness, I've been seeing a lot of the Windows Phone commercials, and every time I see that Nokia phone, I'm like, wow, that's a sharp edged phone. Mm-hmm. Like the top and the bottom. I mean, maybe we're so, like you said, we're so conditioned to expect soft corners and that sort of thing. So
and even there, it seems like there's a lot of space. I guess I wonder how this would compare to the Galaxy Nexus, but it looks like there's a lot of black space on the bottom, not so much on the top. As I'm looking at I guess you can't really compare unless you have the two phones in front of you.
Yeah.
But it looks kind of large and boxy, but.
Well, 5 inches
is what I'm used to.
Yeah, 5 inches is pretty big, though. So
yeah,
but those 1080p displays. I mean, if that's the standard now,
bring it.
Yeah,
I'm all about it. My eyes have been spoiled, and it's unnecessary. It's totally unnecessary, but it's awesome. So why not?
No.
So there we go. Oh, and also, I think we mentioned the Z dust proof and waterproof, which was kind of its big selling point. Just the fact that I can't remember how deep it can go in the water, but it has sealable ports.
Yeah,
which I find annoying.
Those little flip
things. I understand why they're there. Flippy things. Yeah.
Waterproof, not just water resistant. So you can drop in the toilet and it'll be fine.
Yeah, drop it in the toilet every day.
Honestly,
don't worry about it.
I think not to go back to Windows phones because this is a Windows phone, but I was just at the movies and they're running the wind because they really want you to try the Windows phone. So they're running all those ads in front of movies nonstop.
Yeah.
But there's that one ad of the kid playing with the phone and beating it up. And like, I think that's another, I know we're not doing like 2013 trends, but I think we're going to see more trends of phones and devices that can take a beating, that are waterproof, can be dropped. Which is great.
That's a trend I can get behind completely.
Yeah.
Everybody has a hard time keeping these devices. Do manufacturers want to make their devices damage-proof?
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good question. Apple may not.
Carriers probably don't either. If you're subsidized and locked into a contract, suddenly you're paying full price for your next device. Vizio, I cannot say that I've ever used a Vizio Android device.
Neither have I.
Yeah.
We demoed the Google TV device. That's
okay,
an Android
the
device.
CoStar.
Yeah, the CoStar. Yeah,
yes.
So there you go.
Aaron Newcomb brought in the CoStar. So I guess we've seen that up close and personal. Vizio unveiled a 10-inch tablet that is running Tegra 4. I think they touted it as the first device to be running Tegra 4, the new Tegra 4 processor. A 2560 by 1600 display, 32 gigs of storage. You know, you're pretty much typical straightforward tablet specs here. Being that it's Vizio and a value brand, they didn't give a price, I don't think, for this, but I'm expecting, you know, probably somewhere around $400 for the 10-inch version. That sounds about right on this. They also unveiled a 7-inch version to kind of compete, obviously, with the Nexus 7, the 7-inch gorilla in the room. and it's let's see here, 1280 by 800 IPS display, 16 gigs of storage, running 4.2 when it ships. I think the demo models were running 4.1. But a couple of Jelly Bean tablet devices. Honestly, the design I actually kind of like.
I like Vizio. Yeah. I've always liked it. If I was going to buy a TV tomorrow, I'd probably buy a Vizio.
Yeah,
like I just like the brand for some reason. I don't know why.
And the brand for being known for being a budget brand does not have a bad reputation around that. You know, it's not like a budget brand and that's why it's doing that because you bought that.
I got an email from one of those emails from Amazon which is like, "Hey, you like TVs? We've got TVs on sale." And like who's going to, you know, like I would never buy a TV off Amazon, although maybe I would. But they had a 60-inch TV for like $999. I was like, "Oh, I'm like, I have a 52. I could go for 8 more inches." But for some reason, I've got complete, total brand faith in Vizio, and I can't tell you why. I just think it's good stuff, you know?
So, yeah.
Curious about the phones, though. I'm looking over your shoulders.
Yes. So they also have a couple of phones. I should reiterate, because I didn't point this out with the tablets, and I think this is cool, and I hope that this is a trend. Differentiating your device by not differentiating it. What I mean by that is differentiating your device by giving plain vanilla Android. And that's what Vizio is doing here. I think that's kind of a really cool thing. I doubt that's going to improve their update schedule necessarily. I don't know. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. But I guess I'm jaded at this point. I just assume it won't. But still, people want that vanilla experience. And I'm almost convinced that, like, you're differentiating yourself if you're giving that vanilla experience, and that's
no
a good thing.
No bloatware.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
A lot of people are going to get into it. So anyways, back to the phones. 5-inch and a 4.7-inch phone. The 5-inch, again, 1080p display. The 7-inch has a 720p display. Other than that, they're pretty similar. Well, I guess the 5-inch is a dual-core 1.5 gigahertz Qualcomm with 2 gigs of RAM. So it's not the quad, which, you know, I think... more and more people are hoping for in the premium phones anyways. The 4.7-inch device has a dual-core 1.2 gigahertz chip with 1 gig of RAM. Both phones lack support in the U.S. So they don't have that support right now.
Yeah.
The Vizio CTO, Matt McRae, says that they wish to sell enough in China to be able to come back to the States with a little bit more leverage for negotiating deals for carrier and LTE support. So hopefully if this goes right, we'll see more Vizio in the U.S.
I like how in the screenshots they've got Baidu search instead of Google search.
Yeah. Targeted to China.
Yep.
And I think that's also, if you see some of the screenshots, you'll see four buttons at the bottom.
I was going to ask about that. What is that fourth
button?
It's the
localization thing. I guess for the versions of Android,
the
approach in China, at least that's how they explained it.
Yeah.
So that's why they have that going on there.
Interesting.
So that is Vizio. What else do we have here?
CES is so much fun.
CES is, there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
A few more quick mentions.
Yeah, these are like little random things.
Yeah, little random things. Lego Mindstorms EV3, programmable robots are here. I'm so excited about this. This might be my favorite thing in the list.
I know, it's pretty cool. I got to say, I did not expect to be so stoked to see Lego come up on the Tech News Today lineup.
Yep.
And then the more I saw about this, the more I was like, man, it would be awesome to be a kid right now.
Yeah, totally. I actually haven't played with Mindstorms a whole lot, but I've got a daughter, so I have a really good excuse to start in the next few years. And it looks like I don't know if you have you guys played with Mindstorms very much. It looks like these are programmable bricks that have their own their own processors.
Yep.
And I'm sure, and they have iOS and Android compatibility. So I don't. So you can actually program these on Android. Like I'm trying to figure out what the Android link is.
I was too, and I couldn't quite figure it out. I don't know if that means that it can interface with Android once you've done your programming inside of the bricks, as well as with iOS. Like maybe they released some sort of an app that interfaces with it. I don't think that's running on Android.
It's probably running on their Mindstorm thing. Yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's some sort of interface now where you can do all the programming and control with a remote control with an Android device.
Yeah, that'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah. What else do we have?
Kids are
Polaroid.
So lucky.
I know, kids are so lucky. What the heck?
I know. They don't even appreciate it. No, no.
It's like, what?
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
Yep.
Polaroid confirms the IM1836 mirrorless camera, which runs Android. And they added three new cameras. And this is also another area that I haven't played around with very much, like these Android-based cameras.
Neither have I. I don't know. How do you feel about it? Like, what is your kind of gut reaction on Android cameras, Gina?
It seems like you're trying to kill a fly with a sledgehammer. Yeah. I don't know. It's like a little too much. I mean, when I think Android camera, I think, well, my phone. At the same time, you know, it's like, hey, I want to have a really, really good, you know, hardware that's built for taking pictures running with Android. I like the idea, you know, of not having to have an iFi card or, you know, being able to share from the device and edit and do the things that you can do in Android. But I don't really have any hands-on experience with it, but I'm interested because I take a lot more pictures now because I've got a kid and that's what you do. This looks like a really like neat camera. Actually, and I'm trying to see what the price on this is.
$399.
Wow.
Should arrive in the first quarter at $399 with a 10-30 millimeter lens included.
That's a far cry from the days of me buying my $29.99 Polaroid instant camera.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
It's a 1 megapixel 1080p video capable mirrorless body with Android, Android 4.1, and lets you share. It does all the things you would expect. It lets you share your pictures over Wi-Fi and connect to other devices, Bluetooth and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like on one hand, it's kind of silly to think, Android and a camera, why do you do that? But on the other hand, it makes a perfect sense because Android just as a whole, the power of the platform is you can add this kind of capability to whatever you want. Want to add it to a refrigerator? Sure. Yeah. Sure. You can, load up an app on your refrigerator that has Android built into it. That would actually make using that refrigerator easier. Does it matter that it's running on Android? Not really, but it still does cool stuff.
It's a mobile platform. And we're just so trained or we're expecting mobile to mean phone or tablet.
Yeah, exactly.
But
that's
really,
how it is.
I mean, we're going to, you know, see it on, we've already seen it on watches. You see it now. I mean, honestly, I think the cameras is a great idea for the reason Gina mentioned, you know, like Wi-Fi support, instant upload to Flickr, instant upload to Instagram, you know, like that, all those integration is really cool.
Yeah.
So,
Yep. And last item, Vuzix. The Vuzix M100, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, Vuzix, is a Google Glass competitor. This is kind of interesting since Google Glass hasn't really been released yet. But these are Android-powered smart glasses that run Ice Cream Sandwich, and they connect to your phone. And it looks like, I couldn't quite tell, but it looks like you kind of control these with your phone more than anything. It's kind of a not giant, it's a large thing that you connect to your own glasses, and there's this kind of heads-up display. You guys are looking at the pictures, right?
Yeah, it's reasonably giant.
It doesn't look that much bigger than Google Glass. It's just that Google Glass is integrated into glasses frames, where that's snapped onto glasses frames, right? So
I guess the base of this makes it look big.
That's enormous. Yeah. Look at that. That is
really large. The base is large.
Yeah.
So I'm actually really excited to see Google Glass. I really want to see what Google does, since, you know, Google makes Android, and I'm sort of skeptical about kind of third party coming in and being like, oh, we're gonna make the Glass application using Ice Cream Sandwich, which is a little bit old at this point. I want to see I think Google's gonna kind of set the bar for what to expect for this kind of device, which hasn't really proved itself yet.
Yep.
Totally.
I'm really, really curious about seeing the what you see when you're wearing the glasses. Like, that's what I want to know. What does the UI look like, and how do you interact with it? And I know a couple of people at Google who actually have the glasses and been wearing them, but I haven't had the opportunity to be like, oh, and they probably probably can't even tell us, but you know, I'm sure Gina, yeah, you run into the same thing. But like, I'm dying just to show me screenshots, show me something. What is, how is it going to work?
What do you see?
Yeah, me exactly. Too. They're supposed to be shipping this year, right? Did you guys order your glasses at the or the prototypes at I/O last year?
I did not.
I did, but I have a feeling Uncle Leo is going to end up with it because I told him immediately after it. I said, I signed up for this figuring you'd probably want it. And he said, yes. So I doubt he's going to give it to me as a Christmas bonus. So.
Well, you'll get to play with it.
Yeah,
you'll
exactly. That's what I figured. Just to be able to use it is good enough for me. Probably not going to use it all the time if I owned one. Actually, They show it off all the time, like picking up your baby and... You know, with both hands and still videotaping it. We are having a baby in April, so maybe it would come in handy, but you know, we'll see. All right, let's dive right into apps. All right. So I alluded to this at the top of the show. Google Play. So this is basically a study by The Sociable, new data, where they basically plotted out all the available numbers for Google Play and used what they call a process of polynomial regression. So that sounded fancy enough. I had to put it in. Basically, they are projecting that Google Play is going to hit 1 million apps in June, or possibly sooner, they say, than the iOS App Store.
Interesting. I also find it interesting that webpage on VentureBeat used the graphic apparently from like 2 or 3 years ago.
I know,
with
really
all those app icons they're showing. I'm like, layer? I'm like, whoa.
Wait a minute. Is Doom on Android?
I don't know.
It's like, back to the future.
Like, that is totally the 2009 Android graphic. I'm sorry. I'm nitpicking.
Now I'm wondering if I should have even put this in here.
No, sorry.
I don't know. I just thought it was kind of an interesting milestone. Obviously, it hasn't happened yet. They're projecting it for the future. The question always kind of, you know, on these kind of things tends to come around to, you know, iOS fans saying, yeah, but the quality of apps on, you know, on Android are worse than the quality of apps in iOS. I don't know if I necessarily buy that anymore. I think big progress has happened, particularly in the last 6 to 8 months with the quality of apps. What do you guys think?
Yeah, we talked about it on our kind of, you know, when we were wrapping up 2012, and we're saying the big thing was the solidification of the UI and with Jelly Bean and Ice Cream Sandwich, and then the improvement of the apps. I think, you know, I don't think we're quite at parity yet, but every time we go, and we're going to go into the arena in a little bit, every time we go into the arena, the apps are looking a little better.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've done.
A little polished.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the reality is you're going to combine the iOS App Store and the Play Store. I mean, the fact is that anybody can, like, launch App Inventor, put together, you know, an Android app that plays, you know, a kitten's meow and upload it to the Play Store, and that counts, right? With the iOS App Store, you have to go through sort of a really annoying and nail-biting approval process. So there's that. But honestly, I don't think that this number matters. I mean, I think what matters is, are all the major apps that people really want to use, the most popular major apps, are they represented on both platforms? And I think the answer to that is absolutely yes at this point. And that wasn't the case in the beginning with Android. My thing, I don't think that there are any major glaring omissions in the Play Store, but my thing, I'm coming off of a year of using an iPhone, which I wrote about on my blog, mostly just to get a sense of like what the iPhone ecosystem is like. My thing is, like, you have these like little kind of interesting small startups launching apps on iOS first, and that's frustrating to me as an Android user, because I'm like, hey, I want to try that out, you know. So like TimeHop or Lyft, I mean, the only examples I can think of apps that have launched first on Android are like Ingress and Field Trip, and those are Google, that's Niantic is a Google funded thing. So you know, I'm kind of still waiting for that, kind of what we were talking about earlier about, you know, the game that's going to sell the Android powered console. Like, I want to see a third party not affiliated with Google launch their app on Android and have it just be awesome.
Well, that
and have people say, like, I want this. You know, kind of like what Google Maps was for Android, but that was a Google product, and now that the
totally.
That's not an issue because Maps is available on iOS. That's quite good.
And Gina, you're tapping into a huge nitpick of mine, which I'm sure Jason will laugh when I say it, but I rail against this, and I don't understand how now in 2013 there are any mobile app developers creating for one platform. When you have the numbers behind both, and I'm not even saying develop for Android, not for iOS, but if I was at a mobile startup right now, it's no longer about I'm making iOS apps. You're just making applications, and it doesn't matter what device they're on. You should be prepared to do them all, because right now it's millions of people. And when we saw how slow Instagram was to get to Android, when we saw how slow Path was to get to Android, you know, and like, yes, I understand iOS is sexy and cool and all stuff like that. But, you know, the fact that, you know, for example, there's that new email app that everybody was talking about right before Christmas for iOS. I forget what it's called. And I can't look it up because I don't have my laptop.
Oh no!
But it was called like Mailbox or something like that. I don't know. But and it's this beautiful new approach to mobile email.
I do remember.
And I go and I'm like, excellent. I go and look at it, and it's iOS only. And it's like, come on, you know, like
letterpress.
Letterpress is a good example.
I think it's a matter of like you have these small companies or these individual indie developers who are like, I don't have a whole lot of resources, so I'm going to focus it, you know, on one market first, and let me do it on iOS because, you know, you make more money on iOS. My app, I released for Android first. I was using Android, released it for Android first a year earlier than the iOS version. And like I said, it's super nerdware. So my users are more likely to have a Google Wallet account set up, more likely to buy apps. But my sales have been about the same on each platform. But not everybody has had that experience. And things like Game Center apps and newsstand apps, like they're not quite the equivalent on the Android side. And I think it's just a matter of cost and time. So I don't think this is a big deal, because I think these new apps that are iOS only, I think the idea is that, oh yeah, we'll release for Android like as soon as, you know, we get our funding or we prove out that this is you know, something that's worth. But as someone who loves technology and wants to try a new thing right away, it's frustrating when it's like,
I think that will be the differentiator for startups moving forward. I think that it, especially now with the call, I mean, you're right. I mean, there's a resource factor in whether people know iOS or know Android or employ developers or not. But you know, with the costs getting, you know, I'm watching startups, you know, launching applications after just like small 50K rounds. You know, like it's you can develop on both platforms if you want to. I really believe there's a bit of a bias there. You know, but we'll see. Hopefully, I think the next wave of successful applications will be cross platform when they launch. I just think it's key. So.
Yeah,
and someone in the chat room just said Sparrow, and that's not what I'm thinking of. Sparrow, which is an email app that Google bought in mid 2012.
I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah,
I cannot remember.
Yeah, I don't want to go to the laptop because I said I wouldn't. The reason why, because I'm sure it's in my search history. I can find it on my phone. I'm like that. Go, you guys go. Move on to the next one.
All right. Well, Tina, I don't know if you thought this was as cool as I did. I've been watching this a little bit. What did you think about WebOS being ported to Nexus 7?
Yeah, this is pretty interesting. Well, you know, I'm an open source sort of lover and geek, so I love to see this kind of thing. Open WebOS was ported to the Nexus 7. There's a video here on Engadget of it running on the Nexus 7. I just sort of love to see devices that were never meant to run certain operating systems run them. I just think it's fun. I love to see a community that's so dedicated to a platform that they're like, we're gonna peanut butter and chocolate, let the Nexus 7 and open WebOS. Why not? I don't think this is going to really go anywhere. I mean, I think this is hobbyist, enthusiast, kind of fun hacking project, but it looks really good. I mean, it looks like they really sort of hooked into the hardware controls really well, and it looks crazy. It looks crazy to see WebOS running on a Nexus 7.
Yeah, you know, it's a little laggy, but other than that, it looks pretty complete. I think what I like about this is I can't remember if it was before I got my original Motorola Droid. It must have been shortly after I got my Motorola Droid. I went to the New York CNET office to help them with their podcast studio, and Jeff Bacalar was there, and he had the Palm Pre, and I got to play around with WebOS for a little bit. And I had that moment where I was playing with WebOS and going, God, did I make the right decision here? Like, WebOS is really cool. And having never owned and used WebOS regularly, it would be kind of cool to spend, you know, probably about as much time as I would, which would probably be like 20 minutes, you know, just sitting down with this and kind of thumbing through it and going, oh yeah, that's what it would have been like. I don't know. I think it's cool when you kind of have the ability to kind of get this open window to another world in this way. So I think it's cool that they ported it.
Engadget kind of, you know, angled the story like the touchpad Go that might have been. Like,
yes,
if you
wonder
what their device would look like this is what it would look like. So I thought that was neat.
Very, very cool. All right. Well,
I found it. I added, not only did I search on my tablet and found, I put a link into a TechCrunch article, it's an app called Mailbox. Mailbox that came out around December. It was announced around mid-December. It's iOS only. I put it next to the Under apps.
Under apps.
Yeah, sorry.
You said that you use an iPad, right? You said you
do. I do have an iPad. Yeah, I do have an iPad. Yeah.
Okay, I was actually getting hassled on Google Plus today because people were like, "Oh, you're going to host All About Android, but you're using an iPhone."
Yeah.
So you kind of go both ways. So
yeah, no. Well, I go both ways. I have a MacBook Pro and I have an iPad because I do development as well, Gina. So I have to test on both platforms and admittedly there are things like I haven't been able to find a DJ app on the Android that I want to use yet. This video we just saw, that's Mailbox, which is going to be iOS, which I would love to see on Android.
Do you have a personal policy like where you're like, oh, I'm only going to use apps that I can use on both on all my devices, or do you sometimes give in and say, okay, fine, I'll use this iOS only app just on my iPad? This like quandary, you know. I was like, I don't want to get involved in this app because I don't want to have to miss it when I'm on my phone.
It's becoming less and less. I wouldn't say that I draw a line in the sand and be like, I'm Android only. And even though I'm going full Android today, I am open because I am, you know, working product and want to be in up on things. I don't want to miss out, so I want to see things. But that said, the Nexus 7, the big story for me was the Nexus 7 pretty much put a layer of dust on my iPad. I mean, now I take this to the gym. Sure. I watch Netflix on it. I'm reading on it. I read Ready Player One on this in 3 days. Like, it, you know, like every application I was using the iPad for has slowly moved over here, with the exception of that DJ app. If the people that make the DJ app, DJAY, that one, I forget the name of the company, if they made an Android version, I would just have the iPad for development only. So,
mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, and just to kind of get back to what you were saying just a few seconds ago about this, Gina, your blog post where you kind of introduce, you know, that you're starting on All About Android, you kind of explain a little bit about your time with iOS. You say something, you can't truly criticize or praise software as intimate as your mobile phone operating system until you live with it day in and day out for months.
Yeah.
I completely agree with that. The whole absolute hate against Apple based on being a fan of Android thing never sat well for me. You know, we get criticized a lot because we do have Max on the show, and it just doesn't sit well for me. I know I'm probably going to get, I'm inflicting emails upon myself. I'm doing it to myself right now.
But I
want to, because I don't think it matters ultimately why you have to draw a line in the sand. I think it's important to know what all sides are like.
Well, we've talked about this before, and that it's our human nature. It's I'm a Mets fan.
Yeah,
I don't like the Yankees. That's just how it goes. Like, you know, like we, you know, like I spent a lot of my day doing comic books. I'm a Marvel fan. I'm not a DC fan. We set up these, you know, conflicts, these, you know, and it's one-to-one conflicts, and you pick a side. And like, even I'm guilty of it. Like a couple of around the holidays, one of my staff who had a flip phone for years, and at every convention I'm like, dude, you have to get a smartphone. I have to be able to message you. So he finally bit the bullet and he bought an iPhone. And I was giving him crap on Twitter. I'm like, oh, you disappointed me, and you're just one of the sheep and stuff like that. And then I was like, well, mainly I was just teasing him. But it's so easy to fall into that, to have some pride. You want to rally around something.
Yeah. It's true. But this is why I want to do the show, is I know that you guys aren't about the don't take the fanboyism to extremes. And the reality is, like, if you love technology, you're curious about and you appreciate like the different values or the different of sort of the different offerings. I'm actually ashamed to say that I haven't given, you know, WebOS or back in the day WebOS, but now like Windows Phone kind of the same kind of treatment. I mean, if someone on Twitter was like, well, but if you had to choose one, you know, what would it be? And obviously it's Android, because I'm here and that's what I'm using right now. And my foray in iOS was just kind of like, I want to understand what it is about this platform that because, you know, people are really zealous about iOS as well. And absolutely, I think that the platforms have a lot to learn from one another. I mean, I just think there's like fundamentally sort of different values. And I tend to land on the open source side of things a little bit more, because that's just me. But it's just a preference. You know, it's not a religion.
And I think the thing is that ultimately you need the best tools for what you need to do with it. So,
absolutely.
You know, so for both of us working in development, there are certain tools we need to be able to test and to develop things. Jason, both you and I work in media, and we do a lot of video and audio editing and stuff like that. Like, I would gladly go switch. I was thinking about going to a Chromebook in the fall. Remember, I'm like, mm-hmm. I might go full Android, all Google. Like, I do this stuff, but I need Photoshop and I need video editing software, and so that's stuff. So I need a MacBook Pro that can run that. You know, I mean, I have a Windows desktop at home, you know, like nobody, that's my big secret, but it's like, you know, like, cause I want to load up IE and see how bad the site I'm working on looks, you know, so I mean, like the thing is that, you know, like I would gladly do it, but some of the tools need to show up.
Right.
If there was a cloud-based Photoshop or a version of Photoshop that was installable on a Chromebook or the Chromebox we got at IO, I would totally switch. Because everything I'm doing is moving up to the cloud, like the tools are changing. But just because it's got a logo on it doesn't mean it's a bad piece of hardware. This is a great laptop. This has been, you know, to war with me, and it's been great. So
agreed.
Yeah.
Good way to put it.
Anyway.
Awesome. Nice tangent. I'm happy we had this.
Yeah.
Let's jump into the arena.
Two enter. One lives. Android Arena.
Boom. Well, it feels like ages ago.
Our first arena, 2013.
So looking back into our, back into the past, episode 90, you may remember it from such years as last. We had Mauricio Balvanera on with us, and we each brought apps, and sure enough, yes, I closed out the year with Knot, reaching 58% of the votes. Looks like Slice Keyboard.
I am shocked second. Slice came in second, nice. Honestly, I thought.
That's great.
Gina, have you seen that? Did you see that?
No, I didn't. I haven't seen it.
Go look up Slice Keyboard, and it's like the most, it's amazing.
Your brain will explode. Who knows if there's even one person that's downloaded it that uses it on a daily basis?
Yes, I have seen this. This is ridiculous.
Isn't it?
Like the best kind of way. Oh my gosh, yes. I actually reviewed this when it was, or something similar to it, when it was like in a very, very early prototype, and it was just insane. I actually pitched the story to my editor, and he was like, what? But it's just, it's fantastic. It's so great that it came in second.
It's incredibly unique.
Savant keyboard.
It was really, really hard for me to try and do the demo.
I spent time over Christmas. I'm like, I'm going to use this, and I'm going to write a blog post with this. And I had to get up and walk around and clear my head. I was just like, this is crazy.
I love it. That's awesome.
Typing words should not be this taxing on my brain.
I am taking second place as a victory with Slice Keyboard.
I would say so. That was very good. Uber Conference came in third at 21%. Probably, hit a little bit because the demo didn't quite go so well.
Is TechAce still keeping track of this? We need the stats. I know he doesn't watch when the show's live anymore because I think it's Tuesdays. He's busy. But TechAce, if you're listening, let us know who won what the stats on 2012 were.
Yeah, I'm curious to know how 2012 ended. But we are starting a new year. Which means at least this episode, three new awesome apps. Ron, let's start with you. What you got?
All right, I'll start with me. So I'm going to go to my tablet. I pulled it off. I got my lovely new Dodo case today, by the way. I'm very excited.
I love the Dodo case.
Oh, yeah, and they got the Nexus 7 ones, and so now it looks very nice. Mm-hmm. So as being a Nexus 7 convert and lover of the tablet now, I am always on the lookout for tablet-optimized applications, and I'm often looking for applications that I will use on a regular basis because they fill some hole in my life. And one of them happens to be a lot of us, we live and die by the blogs we read and the sites we read and our RSS feeds. And I imagine we all use Google Reader, but as everyone knows, that Google Reader interface is a little shaky and kind of annoying, and there's a million and one RSS readers. But every now and then one steps up, and towards the end of the year, this one came out, and I'm actually kind of surprised I'm sneaking this in. I thought somebody else, if we had done the show instead of not taking the past 2 weeks off, I think somebody else would have stole this one from me. But I took a look at, over the break, the app called Press, which is available in the Google Play Store. And it's $1.99. And similar to what we were talking about of how apps are starting to get more pretty or iOS-esque in terms of their look and feel, Press definitely falls into that category. It is an RSS reader that ties into your Google Reader account. And the interface is just very nice. It's very elegant. I have it here. I was just cleaning my screen. I have it here on my Nexus 7 so we can take a look at it. So boots right up. And I previously already linked it to my Google Reader account. And so let me bring down my display a little so it won't be as harsh. There you go. There we go. That's a little better. So what you've got here is tablet optimized. So here I'm on the portrait version, right? Yeah, landscape's the other way. And what you've got here is you've got a little sidebar that shows you my different buckets. So I've got comics, news, music, technology, web comics, the things that I read. And then over here you've got the various different sites. It pulls in the fave icon from the site. So, for example, this is Brooklyn Vegan, a big music blog. And then it gives you a number of how many articles are read or haven't been read. And then it's integrated very nicely with using the whole Google Android, what's the Metro? Not Metro. That's Microsoft. Yeah, what is it? I can never remember the word.
Roboto?
The UI. The UI.
Holo.
Stuff. Holo. That's what it is. Holo. Yeah. I think Metro for Android. That's how I always think about it.
See,
so it's using the Holo, but with a red kind of look and feel. And you can't really see it here because it's kind of tight. But because we're on here, we're on the unread ones. There's a little red bar over here. I can switch to the ones that are red. I switch to the ones that are favorited. Now, if I move it down to landscape mode, it swaps automatically. If I go down, if I drill down into a blog, it kind of gives me this nice little kind of split screen view, and I can just pop it around there so you can see it here. So what I've got is I've got the list of stories that are here, and then when there's a story I want to read, it just pulls it right up, and it pulls it from the RSS feed, and then you can just swipe back to get back to the list. You know, and it's just a nice, smooth, elegant RSS reader that just gets the job done, which is basically all you really want. You know, in this case, it takes, you know, in landscape mode, it gives you the full screen, and then you kind of go back, and it gives you that, you know. Mm-hmm. And easy swiping, just pretty simple. It just worked straight out of the gate, does everything that you'd want from a RSS reader. You can open in a browser. You can adjust the fonts. Or, you know, you can go, this is using their Source Sans Pro. I can use Roboto if I want to. And the settings are pretty simple in terms of adjusting the sync, how often you want it to sync with Google Reader, how many max items to do. You know, you can manage your cache, what to do with links and things like that. But it's just a nice, pretty simple RSS reader. So it's called Press, $1.99 in the Google Play Store. Totally worth it if you're looking for that nice RSS reader that just, you know, gets you to your content.
Yeah, and so. Syncing with Google Reader, that's always...
Oh, yeah, and it was seamless. I mean, like, you loaded the app up, and the first screen has got that Press logo, and then it picks up your Google account from you've already logged into Google via Android, and you just hit log in, and it just syncs up, and I was up and reading in about 2 minutes, so, if that. So, Press.
Very nice.
Totally worth $1.99. So... All right, there's a little setup going on.
I just realized, I swear that I set this to install through the Play Store, and it didn't. Gina, go ahead and take your app, and I promise it'll be installed once you get to me.
All right. I'm feeling a little pressure. This is my first entry into the arena, and I asked Eileen if she had any advice for me for doing all that Android.
Wow.
She said, be competitive in the arena.
So of course that was her advice.
I loved that was her advice. So I ran Lifehacker for years, and I've sort of got a soft spot for productivity software. So I wanted to pick something that I use, almost every day. And it's this app called Trello. Trello.com is the web-based version, and there's an Android app as well. This is a project management tool. And I can hear the eyes rolling and the sighs. Like, project management tools are generally super boring, and they make you think of Gantt charts and annoying. Project managers annoying you, asking where is the thing that you said that you would do. But Trello makes managing a project really, really fun because it's got this sort of cool paradigm. The way that it organizes stuff, and this is great for collaboration. Like, so I have like a personal to-do list, but Trello I use to collaborate with my business partner generally on what we're working on. So Trello has this kind of visual idea that you imagine yourself standing in front of a cork board with a stack of index cards, and the cork board is split into columns, and each column has a name. So the default suggested column names are to do, doing, and done. And so you take each one of your cards and you can put it into any column. So that's kind of, and that's what the web app looks like. It looks just like a whiteboard with columns of cards, and the mobile app looks the same. And in each card, you can do all kinds of stuff. You can have conversations. You can embed files. So you see Jason showing on screen now. I set up an AA demo board, and in the to-do column, I have let's make fun of Ron for watching Gossip Girl, right?
Well, you're just going to fit right in now, aren't you?
And so you can see there in that card, I've embedded an image. I've added a due date, which is tomorrow, January 9th. I should have made it January 8th. And you can invite people to the organization and add them to your card. So I added Jason to that card. basically anything that you can imagine you need to do. I mean, you can vote up cards, you can add labels to cards, you can assign people to cards, you can add a checklist within a card, and you can drag and drop these cards around from one column to another. So if we, you know, or if we're done making fun of Ron, we can drag that card from the to-do column and drop it into the doing card. The mobile app is not very... The Android app is not very Android looking, but it's very Trello looking. It looks very similar to what the web app looks like.
I have
like.
It up now.
That blue layout. It's got your columns and your cards, and you can leave comments. And each board has this like kind of stream of activity. So I can see, oh, Jason moved this from to do to done. Or he left a comment on the Gossip Girl card about, you know, we have to come up with a couple of good jokes about that. You can see labels. You can vote up cards. So Jason's looking at it now. If you can see within a card, you can see all the activity on that particular card. You can set up notifications. So it's great. My business partner and I, like I said, live in Trello all day. I'm kind of in Trello in my web browser. But then kind of on the go, I can see that if he's moved something from to do to doing to done, which is great. And the column names, you know, they don't have to be to do, doing, and done. If you're, say, building a website, one column can be design and the other can be copy and the other can be code. You can name them whatever you want. It's just a way to organize your stuff. And that's what I really like about it. It's flexible about how you want to organize your stuff, your like to-dos on a particular project. And you can, I just got a notification. You moved the card.
Yeah, nice. I'm doing it right now. I'm making fun of Ron for watching Gossip Girl, Ron.
Okay. Sorry, Ron.
See, I just did that.
Wow, that was like with venom.
So I just did that. So now I'm going to switch it to done.
Yep.
And that this is all pretty tightly integrated with your Google account. Like you sign into Trello using your Google account, you can attach files to a card from your Google Drive or from your phone itself. You can create multiple organizations, multiple boards. My business partner and I do a board every week. Just keep track of what we did for that week. Like I said, you can vote things up and you can reorganize them. Anyway, I love this app. I live in it. I love both the web-based version and the mobile version because it just keeps me up with what's going on without, you know, sticking post-it notes everywhere around my monitor. So it's totally free, and Fog Creek Software makes this. So they're based in New York City. They make Fogbos and Joel Spolsky. It's Joel Spolsky's company, and he writes Joel and software, which I know a lot of developers will recommend. So like I said, project management, it's not a sexy game. It's not, you know, exactly the most exciting kind of app, but I live in this thing and it kind of makes getting organized. It's a new year. You want to get organized. It makes getting organized kind of fun.
Is this going to be dangerous now? Because Gina, I'm also a project management fan and was a project manager in my former days and love getting things done and all that stuff. So we're going to be a very productive show, I think, from here on out, Jason. I think you're going to have to step up a little.
I'm organized, so I'm not looking at the floor during the show trying to find things.
So, Gina, now you actively use Trello. Do you use your app or do you not use your app? Or
my app is just a simple to-do list. It's just a to-do text manager.
Sure,
basically.
Yeah. So, no, I know.
My kind of personal to-do list for like just, you know, from everything from like make a dentist appointment to, you know, call my mom, whatever. For Trello is really, really good at collaboration. You can use it as just a single user, but it's really good when you're collaborating with other people. So my business partner and I use Trello just to have conversations about to-dos, to follow up with one another. So it's more of a kind of a social collaboration thing. So I use both, honestly. My to-do list, my personal thing, and then Trello I use for a project. You know, for me, and you know, you love GTD, like the difference between a to-do or next action and a project is like a project is a collection of next actions, right? Yep. So, and that's what Trello is really good at.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah, no, I was telling Jason before the show, like I've been playing with Trello like for about a month or so, and I was thinking about putting it in the arena, but I'm like, I don't know if I can explain it or this is really complicated, but you nailed it. That was great. So, yeah, good job.
But thank you. Yeah. I know Jason's like, I'm not sure I know what's happening here, but
actually walking through it with you really kind of solidified
together,
it. And that's usually how it goes. Sometimes I do those demos. I'm like, I'm going to know this a lot better when the demo's done than right now when I'm staring at it. But that's cool. I love anything that makes kind of the collaboration aspect a little bit easier. And it doesn't just have to be for work. It can be for personal. I'm collaborating with my wife on a list of just
things that need to get done around the house, and any app that enables that between devices feels magical when it works perfectly. You know,
the challenge. I mean, it's great. I played a Trello. I think it's great. The challenge organizationally is getting that partner to agree to work with it. You know, cool.
All right. Well, my app is totally similar to all of both of your apps. It's called Dr. Panda's Veggie Garden. Okay, so maybe I need to explain this one a little bit. This is definitely an app for kids. And the reason I wanted to show it off is because I have a 3-year-old daughter. She doesn't use technology. Okay, she loves technology. We try to keep her from using too much technology, but it's kind of a moot point at this point. She's surrounded by it because I'm her dad, and so automatically she's very interested in it. So I'm always kind of trying to find things that if she's going to be using the technology are actually somewhat valuable, well-made, something that she enjoys. And I got to say that the pickings on Android aren't that great when it comes to games, educational games, things like that for your kids. Of course, this is probably going to inspire emails pointing to all these great things. And that's actually why I'm saying this.
There's this game that my daughter plays. Yeah, totally.
But I was pointed to this over the break, and I don't know how close it is to Farmville, honestly. Have either of you played Farmville? I've never played Farmville. I doubt this is anything like Farmville. Have you, Gina?
I have not.
Okay, good. Phew. All right. So then we're all in the dark together. I doubt any kids game is like just like Farmville, but it's basically it's a gardening game. And my daughter played this like crazy. So I wanted to at least highlight. I know our arenas are always dedicated to games for adults. I wanted to at least throw a bone to some of the parents out there. I've got some sound piping through if you want to show it. So they have all of these different mini games that pop up. And I think what's kind of good about this for kids is that it really does kind of teach the kids how kind of the process, like what is involved in planting and, growing vegetables and stuff. Like you got to take the rake and you got to rake it all up, right?
It's like training for chores.
It totally is. Totally is, because we have a bunch of stuff in our backyard that sometimes Lucy will go out and, help mom with. Yeah. And all this stuff is very similar to it. So it's like she picked it up and she knew it right away because she had gone out and done it.
Interesting.
And so you plant your seeds. This is just one mini game example, right? You plant your seeds, and then I think you've got clouds. So you want it to rain so that they get enough water. And then they grow, and you get a lot of corn.
This looks nice.
And it's kind of just like a, like I'll sit there with her and just watch her play this, and the music is really soothing, and it's really engaging. So now you gotta, knock them all down or harvest it. I know I'm getting some rolling eyes in the chat room, but hey, I don't care. This is a lot of fun to play with.
You want to start playing Farmville?
What's that?
This kind of makes me want to start playing.
I know. It's kind of a pleasant game. And then you get all the corn that you harvested, and then you take that and you give it to the person that came up and ordered it. There's just a ton of little mini games like that. And they all kind of show you just the way that you grow different types of vegetables and plants and some fruits and stuff. I just thought it was a lot of fun and totally different from anything I'd point out in the arena. But I don't expect to win the arena this week, but I do expect some people, this to speak to some people and be like, you know what, that's a great pick for kids.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's it. Real quick arena this week. It's $1.99. Dr. Panda's Veggie Garden. It's made by Tribe Play. They have a bunch of games like this, a bunch of different educational games that are just, I don't know. I think they're good for kids. They're well designed, well developed, great graphics and great music. And you should check it out. If you're a parent of a small child, I think you'd really dig this.
Very cool.
So there you go.
I love the kid stuff because I have I have reason to
absolutely
be curious about it now.
Absolutely.
I have a kid related anecdote that I'll tell you after we do the poll. So the poll URL.
Okay. Yeah. All right, let's do the poll URL.
Because I don't want to lose that. I don't want to lose it.
Yeah. I'll take that cue. All right, so you can vote for your favorite this week. Is it press, Trello, or Dr. Panda's Veggie Garden. Go to aaapoll.com/91, aaapoll.com/91 for episode 91, and tell us which is your favorite. See what I did there in the title? Episode 91 of All About Android brings a new host of great apps.
Wow, look at that.
Get it?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was good. All right, so we'll see. So far, it's a pretty level playing field. All right, so what is your anecdote?
Quick anecdote. So over the I know because we've gone for 2 weeks, and I meant to tell you this to put in the rundown, but my sister got my 9-year-old niece a Kindle Fire, and Christmas Eve she said, "Oh, I need your help setting it up," and I said, "Oh, I'll totally set it up," and downloaded the Kid Play Free subscription thing.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Amazon nailed it. Can I tell you?
Really?
After setting up a kid on that, you can have. It's $2.99 for one kid, I think, or $6.99 for unlimited kids. And you can have – they have different profiles. They can have a different icon. They can log in. And it is all of this books, games, movies, videos, all this stuff. Never ask you to buy anything. Never ask you to pay for anything. It was, I mean, like, it is a nicely set up application, and she killed the battery on Christmas Day. Like, by 7 o'clock, she's like, the battery's dead. And so we had to charge it back up for her again. Yeah, I mean, like, talk about, like, I know we talked about it. We were like, oh, that sounds like a good idea, subscription model and all that sort of stuff. They nailed it. If you have a child and you want them to have – and you don't want to worry about dealing in the app stores or anything like that, but you want to have them with a tablet and engage that way, that Amazon Playtime app is totally worth it, like all $3.
That's awesome.
It's amazing. Yeah,
so, yeah, and that's $3
– $3 monthly.
Month, which – Yeah, that's not much.
It seems like the next step for Android in general to have better parental controls built into Android, native to Android. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that this year, actually.
And speaking of the parental controls, absolutely. In the Amazon app, you can control the amount of time the kid plays on each content type. So you can say only give them 10 minutes of games, but an hour of video and a half. So if some people might, I was a kid who I couldn't take my nose out of a book and they'd have to tell me stop reading and go do other stuff. So you can say, after an hour you're done, go do something else. And so those controls are in there. My sister's not using them yet, but
she will.
Yeah.
But, I imagine if her kid is killing the battery every however
but
many hours.
She was just like, she came over to me with a different book. She's like, look, I downloaded it.
That's awesome.
The crazy thing is that both the 9-year-old and the 6-year-old, I didn't show them either of them how to use it, and they just grabbed it and they hit the home button and they were doing a downloading stuff. Like, it was no ramp up at all. It's freaky. This is the future. It's bizarre.
Awesome.
Gotta overtake this.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's
very
great.
Cool. Yeah,
cool.
Well, we have reached the end of this episode, and man, I'm stoked. I'm stoked for 2013.
Me too. I think it's gonna be good.
Good year.
I pulled it off. I didn't take my laptop out.
Well, I did
as a prop, but I didn't. Okay. I stayed on the tablet. There you go. I did it. I don't know if I'll do it next week.
I'm sure that you're gonna like knock it over by touching it.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, you were editing the spreadsheet on the next. That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Well, I copied and pasted. That was about it. Yeah, but
they did improve the spreadsheet capabilities.
Yeah, if they hadn't improved that, I love the Drive app.
It's better. Great. It's definitely
the Drive
way
app
better.
Is much better. Yeah,
but.
Very cool.
Well, Gina, it is awesome having you on the show. We're just super stoked. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. This is the point of the show where we kind of plug away and talk about what we're doing. What are you up to these days, Gina?
Not too much. I hope you'll check out my app. It's To Do Text, todotxt.com. It's for Android and iOS, but like I said, it's kind of nerdy, but it lets you sync. Everybody has a todo.txt file on their desktop, and it syncs it to Dropbox and brings it up on your phone and lets you kind of add tasks and complete them really quickly. Otherwise, you can check out my stuff at ginatrapani.org. I blog and I do a couple other shows. I do This Week in Google on Twit on Wednesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific. I hope you'll check that out. We cover some Android stuff, but mostly kind of general Google news, and that's about it.
Awesome. Well, that's a lot, and plenty to follow for Gina. If you are a fan of Gina, which I definitely am, you can find her in a lot of places, and that's awesome. How about you, Ron?
You can find me at about.me/RonXO, where you can find all the links to my Google Plus and Facebook and Twitter and all the fun stuff. And if you're into comic books, check out ifanboy.com, where I am making people angry on a daily basis.
So, yes.
Yeah. Big Spider-Man stuff this week. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm so out of the loop.
I'll tell you after the show.
Okay. Yeah. Big thanks to Brian Burnett for being our TD. Thanks.
Good job for doing that today.
Really appreciate it, man. You can find me at about.me/JasonHowell or on Twitter. I am @JasonHowell. That is it. Let's wrap this up. Leave us a voicemail. 347-SHOW-AAA is the number. You can leave us a voicemail there. You can send us an email, or you can attach a link to a video, and it suddenly magically becomes a video mail. Send that email to aaa@twit.tv. You can find the show on Twitter. We are at Android Show. Show notes can always be found at twit.tv/AAA. You can also find all of our past episodes on the site there. If you want to take a trip into the past of Android, as well as on iTunes, YouTube, all over the place. And finally, you can catch us live every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. That is it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.